This is the ethics of energy, and today is our nuclear day. Today we're exercising our nuclear option. I am Kevin, and this is Brian. And because we have the sense, both between the two of us and from talking to you all, that this is an issue around which there's some energy, around which there's some enthusiasm, I want to start really quickly with a poll. And what I want you to do is I want you to raise your hand if you know what your answer would be to this question. So I don't want to hear yes or no. I just want you to raise your hand if you know whether you'd say yes or no. So it's a topic of debate right now, whether we should license new nuclear power plants in this nation. Say this went to a vote nationally. We just decided to be broadly, boringly democratic about it. We had a referendum nationally. Should we license new nuclear power plants? And you are in the voting booth. Do you know which button you press? Just raise your hand if you know which button you're going to press. Okay, different scenario, different scale. If you're not a citizen of Washington, imagine you're a citizen of Washington. Here in Washington, hopefully within the next 2 to 5 years, we're going to have plug-in hybrid cars, which is a good thing. It means less gas consumption, but of course it means more drain on the electricity grid. We get, I think, about 70% of our power right now from hydro, but that keeps shrinking because we're consuming more power and it's the same amount of water. So with plug-in hybrids, hybrids with population growth, we're going to need more power plants in Washington. Imagine there's a choice we have to make in Washington between, and we only have these two options, between a coal-fired power plant and a nuclear power plant. And you get to vote. Do you know which way you're going to vote? Raise your hand. Okay. Still most, but fewer. Okay, great. I think we were right. There's some energy around this issue. And people are coming in informed, which is going to help us have the kind of discussion we want to have. Really quick, we're talking about energy, we're talking about social energy, natural energy. We said you have to ask three questions whenever you're talking about sustainability issues, environmental issues. You have to ask about technology, what can we do? You have to ask about economy, broadly construed, what is it practical for us to do? And you have to ask about community, what do we want to do? Yesterday, we made this even more complicated by giving you these different scales we can think at. Today, we merged the circles and the triangles, so we have a scale of triangles here. We have some local questions about sustainability, some national, some global. So we have to think about all these questions at all these scales. It's a great big mess. But we have energy that helps us do it. Ethics of energy. You remember I first defined ethics by saying it's the opposite of bumper stickers? And then really needed to give an actual definition. And I said ethics is conversing about what we must do when we aren't sure what we should do. Okay, so today that gets a little harder. It's the same process of ethics. But up to today, we've pretty much been talking about things, at least for me, that I don't know what we should do because I don't understand everything yet. Today we're talking about nuclear power, which is an issue where most of us, based on the hands that were raised, we do know what we should do. But we don't all think the same thing. For instance, Brian and I have different opinions about what we should do about nuclear power. But Brian and I are a we, and so this is ethics. Brian and I have to figure out what must we do given that we're not sure what we should do collectively. We don't agree. That's what ethics is. It's talking about these things that are difficult because of what we don't know and because of what we know when somebody else knows something else. Really quick, I want to give another negative definition of ethics. Ethics is the opposite of a presidential debate in this country. Presidential debate in this country is about tricking the other person into saying something unflattering or wrong and making that person not trustworthy. It's all about one-upping the other person. It's very little about content. And it is absolutely nothing about listening. Ethics, on the other hand, is about listening to the other person ethics is about respecting the other person, and ethics is about trying to figure out what the other person has to teach me, and then to teach us. That's not what's going on in presidential debates.
Can I ask you something about your definition of ethics? Because the main verb in your positive definition is conversing.
Yes, it is.
And then the modifiers both refer to action, but you don't in your definition say that we should, as a result of this conversation, be able to do something. Is that deliberate? Are you saying that ethics is only a conversation? Or do you think that the conversation has a purpose beyond the conversation itself?
I think the conversation has a purpose beyond itself, yes. And it's not deliberate, that it sounds like all we're doing is talking. But I think I'm trying to emphasize that something we're really bad at is talking.
Right, I understand.
And in particular, we're bad at talking when we have to do something.
Right.
It's easy to talk about things we're not really invested in. It's easy to talk about things we don't care very much about that aren't urgent. But when we actually have to do something, my definition is trying to stress that's when we have to have the hard conversation. And but if the conversation ends with, well, that was good, I'm going to go home and do what I was going to do anyway, and you do the same, then obviously it hasn't been a really productive conversation. But thank you. That's a really helpful clarification, and also gets me thinking about this definition. So we want to have this discussion that's the opposite of bumper stickers and the opposite of the way we do presidential debates in this country today. And Brian and I, as I say, don't agree about all things about nuclear power, and we want to have this discussion together, and we want to invite you into it. And that's what we're doing today. So we need to be upfront and confess we're not exactly positive what's going to happen today, because we're having a conversation, and we want you to be part of it. So we're not, we don't have a carefully planned 45 minutes and then throwing 15 minutes open. We are going to lay out some groundwork, and then we're going to have a conversation. Again, ground rules for this conversation are respect and listening, and Brian and I are going to work really hard to do that to each other. A big part of that is trust. I think Brian and I have come to trust that even though we disagree about this issue, we both really care about the issue. It's not that one of us is secretly a bad person.
Might be.
It's not that one of us is secretly in the pocket of the nuclear industry or the radical environmentalist and isn't telling. But really, that's the agenda, and it's not for everybody's good. We both have thought a lot about this, have read a lot about this, and care a lot about this, and want to do what's best for the biggest we can manage. So we trust that about each other, and we're asking you to trust that about us and about one another as we have this conversation. Part of that healthy conversation, we think, is going to be asking probably at least as many questions as we make statements, listening at least, listening more than we talk, and affirming people we disagree with, recognizing when people we disagree with are saying something that they clearly believe, that they clearly think is for the common good. So that's the kind of conversation we want to have. And it's a conversation that's about trust and about respect, precisely because we're not aware that that conversation is going on about nuclear power in very many places. It's often a shouting match between bumper stickers or between people at podiums at presidential style debates. And we want to model, we want to try and start a different kind of conversation about nuclear energy.
So we thought about how to manage this, and decided that maybe a place to start would for me to take a couple minutes and just paint a bit of a scenario about where we are as a baseline, because I think different people know different parts of the picture, but we'll kind of start with where we are. and where we are. So, are there nuclear reactors in the U.S.?
Yes.
Anybody know how many?
No.
There's 104. So, is the U.S. a major nuclear producer?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Biggest in the world by far.
Really?
I mean, these are just facts. These are facts. So we, you know, the world gets about 20%, roughly 15 to 20% of its electricity from nuclear power. The U.S. is about the same. We get roughly 15 to 20% of our electricity from nuclear power. The discussion around France, which many of you are having in mind, France makes 85% of its electricity from nuclear power. So, on a percentage-wise, it's heavily invested in the technology, but they consume a lot less electricity than we do. So, on a scale piece, we do. So, and then, so a second piece. Is the nuclear waste, let me just stipulate, nuclear waste is a bad thing.
No,
I think we've got a it's a real bad thing for a real long time. The major, it's probably not useful to talk a lot about specific isotopes in this forum, but major isotopes, isotope of plutonium that has a half-life of 24,000 years, which means that half of it's gone in 24,000 years, and another half is gone in another 24,000 years. So it stretches our ethical timescale.
Big triangle.
And just in case that didn't sound bad enough, I think many people would argue that the major hazard associated with nuclear waste is not radioactivity. The major hazard associated with nuclear waste, and kind of a horrifying scenario, is that plutonium as a metal is actually fairly easy to transport around. It's not horrific. But when it's exposed to air, it reacts to form plutonium dioxide, which is light, fluffy powder, easily dispersed. And it's probably one of the most toxic substances that anyone's ever encountered on Earth. So we not only have the time scale of the radioactivity, but if plutonium is part of the waste stream, we've got a major toxicity concern. So stipulate, it's bad. Okay. Another kind of these are framed because they're just facts. Another frame that I would start with is, in the U.S., is the waste from our nuclear power industry the waste that we're really concerned about when we talk about high-level waste?
No.
99% of the nuclear waste that we have is from our defense industry. 99% of the high-level nuclear waste that the U.S. has is from our defense industry. So, just to put kind of things in kind of a visionary place is that, so you can kind of capture an image. According to a 1996 DOE report, we've got enough high-level waste to cover 9 football fields to a depth of 30 feet. 99% of that comes from our weapons capabilities. One of the things that, so really I think kind of that we can, there's lots of technology debates here, but I wanted to leave you with these three notions that, yeah, it's bad. It's bad for a long time. It's toxic, potentially, in horrifying ways. We have a lot of it, but it's there.
Already.
And you know, when I talk about this without Kevin, I frame that as the genie's out of the bottle. One of the former chairs of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission says, high-level nuclear waste, like death and taxes, is with us. It's with us. We can't wish it away.
I just had a question about the nuclear waste and.
seeing now that a lot of garbage and landfills that are going in and capturing the methane gas and using that for different, you know, useful purposes, are they researching like this, that all this like toxic waste, to see if there's a way that we can use it for something else?
It's a really good question. You know, thank you for answering and asking that. I think it's a there still is a lot of research going on in the nuclear arena. Those of you who follow this closely, you know, may have read about France saying, Jens told me this morning, France has got bacteria they're talking about that can somehow shorten the half-life of plutonium. Lots of new reactor designs. As those of you who have been following this for the week, as in hydrogen, as in biofuels, there is a lot of research and maybe magic bullets in the future for nuclear power. I don't see the magic bullets, but I can't sit here as a scientist and say I don't believe that this is in any way solvable. I can say that I'm much less confident it's a solvable problem than others.
What does the military do with their nuclear waste, and like a nuclear submarine?
It depends. You know, Hanford has a long history of plutonium, and up until 20 years ago, there was high-level nuclear waste from the plutonium production associated with our weapons capability stored in single-layer stainless steel tanks. Hanford, just stainless steel tank. We drained most of those. Mm-hmm. Now we've got some of it. Now I think it's all in at least double-wall tanks. But we've got a huge waste problem. For those, maybe this is another little technical piece, the way that the presumed way that we would deal with the waste now would be to vitrify it, basically encase it in molten glass, so it all comes in so it's kind of encased in glass, take that glass, put it in a tight cylinder, and then do something with the cylinder.
Transport.
Then a miracle happens.
Three elements here.
Sure.
If you have a nuclear reactor producing energy, some of that can be diverted to make nuclear weapons. That's my understanding.
Yeah, let's speak to that. It's not really this is like another level down technical detail, but the way this works, we go mine uranium, and what's going to happen to uranium someday, Kevin?
It's going to run out.
Okay. So we go out and mine uranium. It has a small amount of the operative word is a fissionable isotope, the one that works. We have to enrich that to typically 3 to 5% of this fissionable isotope. And so the way I describe, when I teach this, the way I describe the difference between a nuclear power plant and a nuclear weapon is the nuclear power plants run a very low concentration of these fissionable isotopes so they can control the reaction and harness the heat. And weapons have a much higher concentration for these fissionable isotopes because they don't control the energy release. So the difference between a power plant and a bomb, this is stretching the chemistry a little bit. The difference between a power plant and a bomb is the difference between a fuel cell and a Hindenburg. Right, both are energy. The problem is that one of the problems from a weapons standpoint is the convenient isotope for weapons is plutonium, which is a byproduct of the uranium reaction. So as you use the uranium, you make plutonium. And so the process of making, of kind of isolating that plutonium or upgrading the uranium is done in an enrichment facility. We have one in Paducah, Kentucky. There's also plants in the UK, Netherlands, France, Germany, former Soviet Union. There's other ones around. So without question, it doesn't stretch credulity to say that that this plutonium is potentially a weapons problem. I actually worry more about the toxicity problem, but it's there.
That's the reason that all of this controversy about North Vietnam and Iran has to do around nuclear, building nuclear plants. And is it for energy or is it for, nuclear weapons?
And it's really, the way that the government of this nation has responded has been to say, we want you to have nuclear power, so we're going to give you the fissionable material in such a way that we know you can't make bombs from it, but you can have power. So we are trying to prevent them from getting nuclear weapons by encouraging them to have nuclear power. And that again, is a choice that this society is making.
So that's about really all I want to say about the technology, other than the fact that, let me just kind of maybe launch into a slightly broader discussion that, for me...
Wait, I have one more question. I've talked a lot about is reprocessing, and France reprocesses, and that's... Can you maybe explain that?
Well, you've got sort of a nutshell is we have very low concentration uranium. We run it down, and because the plutonium is a byproduct, we rig the fuel rods essentially to where there's not reasonable amounts of plutonium when we're done. So this is our technology. Breeder technology, which is what France does, is basically they run a slightly higher concentration, they run it longer to create the plutonium, and they react the plutonium as well. So they're actually reacting some of their fuel. But the end game, when they're actually done with that, is something that has a fairly significant amount of plutonium in it. And that's the thing that people worry about.
And how do they store that? In France,
it's a problem. Now, to be fair, volume-wise, it's less of a problem because it's more efficient use of the isotopes. They use more of it up, so the amount of the volumes of waste they have is small. I was actually trying to track that down. I'm not at all an expert in this area. I'm interested in it. I've never worked in the nuclear industry. I was trying to track that question down a couple months ago, and I had a hard time finding the answer to it. It appears that there are actually a lot of debate going on right now between France and the U.S. about U.S. taking France's waste.
You said earlier that 99% of the current waste is byproduct of military processes.
What the DOE said.
So. Is that because of what they need to do to create a bomb, or is that just because they've been doing it for longer than the power plants have been working? And in the future, will that 99-to-1 ratio continue if we were to use nuclear power? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah. I think I understand. I think what I heard you say was that there's this kind of large amount of military waste out there, but. Will the amount of civilian waste eventually catch up and change the percent?
Even proportionately.
Yeah, and the, it seems like the variables are, do we create more military waste?
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Do we create more civilian waste at what rate? Right.
But there's no difference in what they're doing. They still produce the same amount of waste? Like if it was a 1-to-1 ratio between making bombs and making power, would they each be producing the same amount of waste?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. To me, the more interesting question is, should we be making more waste and more bombs? But I think just in the back of my head, I believe people believe there's enough enriched plutonium isotopes available right now from enrichment facilities globally to make about 40,000 nuclear weapons. That's probably enough.
Isn't there, remembering a non-proliferation treaty, has that gone out the window? I mean, wasn't there supposed to be a limitation or actually a reduction in nuclear weapons between at least the Soviet Union and the United States? I mean, we're still making nuclear weapons.
It's out of my area, I don't know. But I would argue that it's perhaps not central to the discussion about nuclear electricity. I think maybe what we could all agree on is that there's a lot of military waste out there, and it's a problem. So, what's the answer, Kevin?
I think it's a hard question. We should have a conversation. We've got about 35 minutes left in our time. We want to spend maybe a little under 10 in each corner of our triangle. We're talking about technology, economy, and community. Since Brian has given us a sort of background in the technology, I want to make an argument I would make about the technology. And then give him and all of you a chance to respond. Nuclear energy, again, making electricity. We might talk a little bit more about weapons later. Making electricity with uranium is another way to turn matter into energy. And it's a different way to turn matter into energy than burning petroleum, which is lighting matter on fire. Same with natural gas, because this is an atomic reaction. But you're going to E equals MC squared, right? To make the matter of the uranium into energy. As Brian had me mention before, the matter that we're using is a limited resource. We can't make uranium from hopes, dreams, and air. It's buried under the ground, and we dig it up, and we turn it into energy. That is fundamentally, in a long-term view, unsustainable. If we're depending on a limited resource to get our energy, then it's not a sustainable way to make our energy. So my sort of initial argument about nuclear energy is it's more of the same. It's us taking something we have a limited supply of and deciding we should depend on it, and just trusting that, well, when it becomes a problem that we're running out of it, somebody else will figure out the answer to that problem. And that, again, is not being a we and feeling responsible. It's saying, well, they'll take care of it. And I don't feel comfortable making that choice.
So here's a place that I think might be a place to start. The question that Kevin asked about coal versus nuclear. My worry is that we have an energy stream here, nuclear energy, that has a massive problem associated with it. My framework is whether we choose to move from 20% of our electrical production to 30% or 40% for some finite amount of time. Doesn't change this model much. The problem's there. What we must do is solve the problem. My worry as an environmentalist is that we default away from nuclear power, even though we have the technology in place, we are practicing it today, but because of decisions we make, we build many, many coal plants. You know, one thing that is also clearly true about nuclear power plants is they have a nice carbon footprint. They have a nice carbon footprint. And so, we're out of this fossil fuel loop. So I would say, and maybe Kevin and I can agree, is that nuclear power is not a long-term solution.
Yeah, and let me, I want to hear from a couple folks, but let me just say about this elements of agreement. I went to a Quaker college and spent some time with consensus. Our hope is not that the two of us will come to complete consensus, and unfortunately our hope is not that the whole room is going to come to consensus. What we want to track here is elements of agreement that Brian and I come to, and then hear your responses. So that's what we're writing up here. And it's that nuclear energy is not a long-term solution, right?
Not sustainable forever.
right?
What do you mean by long term?
I tried to duck that. Well, my honest answer is that, I mean, you have heard us this week. I'm a major fan of any other energy source we can think of, except for coal. I don't know how long those are going to take. I think there's a lot of progress, there's a lot of research. We absolutely have to invest in them as a society. But, you know, wind power is going up 30% a year. How long that takes, I don't know. But in my head, the thing I keep coming back to is nuclear versus coal as a bridge to renewables. And in an ideal world, for me, it would be one generation of power plants. So if the lifetime of a nuclear power plant is 50 years, whatever, I'd say if we decided that we were going to use nuclear energy to fill an electricity gap for the next 50 years, I don't see the problem getting much worse. And I see it as a way of managing some of the carbon emissions from coal.
I guess I was thinking, I was one of the people that isn't really clearly decided on this, and I'm still not, but it seems as though we need to frame the conversation in principle before we get into the details of this versus that. Like, we should have the principle of sustainability, this one thing that we strive for, that we shouldn't compare. You know, I think comparing nuclear to coal is, you know, comparing one devil to another. I mean, there's problems with both. And so maybe there's a finite time of that we kind of deal with the devil and do things that are not acceptable, but for the time.
And I think you put really well what I think is this difference between us. I, as a Christian ethicist, am a little nervous about dealing with the devil. And I think I have a strong point there. But Brian also has a really strong point, which is, okay, the devil is among us. And we keep opening a refrigerator expecting to be cold in there. And if we want to keep doing that, we have to figure something out until we can transfer to a hydrogen, solar, wind economy. And that's not going to happen tomorrow. So I think fundamentally this gets to exactly what you're saying, a question of principles. How dearly do we hold these principles? What would we be willing to give up to not deal with either of those devils?
Right, and I think one of the questions to ask Brian then is, when you say it's not going to get much worse, is it already too bad? No, because to say it's not going to get much worse suggests that what we have is okay in terms of nuclear waste is a really bad thing. Is 1% worse going to be the tipping point into too bad?
That's a great question.
And that's maybe that's a social question.
It could be. I think it clearly has social energy dimensions.
Right.
I think it's a great question. My frame, perhaps flawed, is that I don't believe that whatever solution that we must have for the military waste we have, I don't see anything we would do as a bridge energy source for 50 years that would make that, you know, if we're past the tipping point, we're already past. I don't think we are. I think it's more of a, we need to decide we're going to do this and do it. I don't see 50 years of electricity making it past any point.
And so if we, here's a kind of principle question. If we know that nuclear waste is, you put it, it's a real bad thing, because I suppose you could say smog is a bad thing too, or petroleum certainly has bad consequences. Could one of the principles of decision be kind of like pack it in, pack it out. If I'm getting electricity from nuclear power, then the toxic waste probably should be in my backyard.
Right. Yeah. Here, here.
That's really interesting.
May I offer a rather another simplistic one? You see the half-life, you know, everybody's quoting this half-life of uranium stuff is 24,000 years or something, and yet we're only fueling a reactor for 50 years. We got this huge batch of waste. Technology got us into this. The technology should get us out of it. In other words, we should be able to go back, instead of getting more uranium, just reprocess it, figure out how to use that for that 24,000 years, which is a little bit past my lifetime.
Yeah, I would. I think it's a. I interpret that. I think it's a great perspective. I interpret that as the magic bullet answer, right? I hope that happens, but I don't feel ethically that I can count on it happening.
Whatever man's mind can imagine, he can do.
That's the modernist view, not a postmodernist view.
and it's a question of trust. I mean, it's sort of, who trust? You've had your hand up for a while.
Thank you. You said that you see nuclear energy as as the bridge from coal to renewable energy sources. How is that? If it has such, you know, if it doesn't seem to be a really sustainable solution, and people are already investing in, you know, solar and wind and geothermal and those and hydro. I mean, and I think we need a good mix of them, and depending on the location. But I just don't see how, like, why do you see this as the bridge?
Because people are building coal fired power plants like they're going to stop.
And you think that this would be like the something that our nation would agree on as something to do in between the renewable resources?
Yeah, I think, well, it's a great question. They work at you know, several different scales. We, you know, one is us, maybe Washington, US, the world. The world is building nuclear and coal like it's going out of style. I think there are 5 plants being built in India, a couple in China, nuclear plants. Another one going in South Africa soon. So, you know, the world is in this technology stuff. I think that I completely agree we need a mix, and nuclear shouldn't be in the mix. But I, as an environmentalist, feel stronger about coal than I do about nuclear. Because I see the imminent present danger associated with coal and global warming.
Why not a stronger push just for the renewable resources and like that? I mean, because that's,
I empathize a lot with the statement. We should be pushing everything we possibly can for renewables. I mean, I believe that with every soul of my scientific identity and my Christian identity. But I don't believe, as a scientist, that it's going to match up quick enough. Right? You know, I think there's a renewable future there, but you know, maybe 10 years, you know, maybe by the time you're my age, we'll be laughing about this. You know, and it's all renewable. And I'm worried about getting there.
Okay. I was just confused with that, because all I've heard is controversy over nuclear energy. I've heard no agreement ever, really. I mean, I like that you're doing this elements of agreement, that's good, mm-hmm. But I think that there's so many people that are just so scared of it because of incidents that have happened that, from my perspective, I don't see nuclear even being in agreement ever. And that's why I see renewables as a quicker solution than nuclear.
And that might be true.
I think we better move. we're over time. Okay. And I think you get us there. Because when we're talking about questions of how we're managing our household, whatever size household we're thinking of, we're talking not just about what's possible and how it works, but what will people accept? And I think you make a strong, in this context, economic argument against nuclear power, if I hear you right, which is people don't like it. Nobody wants it in their backyard. Nobody wants to be anywhere near it. Nobody wants to be anywhere near the waste. no governor runs for election based on, I'm going to bring nuclear power to this state. It's not popular. People are afraid of it. People are afraid of it since the 1960s.
Yeah. Because, you know, when I was in the third grade, the reader told me nuclear power was the solution. It was the magic bullet. It was clean. It was cheap. It was going to solve everything.
And today, this, again, social change is possible. In a mere 50 years, we've become terrified of this technology we thought was our answer.
40 years.
It's only 45 years.
And social faux pas are also possible.
I'm honest about how all that.
So that's, I think, a pragmatic argument against.
Yeah.
Is there a way of attacking the concept of the fear? Is it really reasonable? Some of us that know about what's happening, or at least what was happening in other places, we happen to have friends in Helsinki. The friend was the head of the nuclear energy in Helsinki. Finland and Helsinki is nuclear power. That's what is providing for some of underground hot water. And he is our friend, he is smart, we trust him, and he said it's the people that run it that you have to be afraid of. If it's done well, it's fine. Now, Chernobyl isn't very far from them. It wasn't done well, it was a mess. So it depends on the people, but he says the technology is safe. And so we say, is that possible?
I guess you have it. Let me just, I think it depends on the individual who they trust and their experiences. I managed a chemical plant for years and worked in especially chemical industry that dealt with millions of pounds of toxic material all the time near large bodies of people. My mental state is, do I believe we can run a nuclear power plant in the U.S. safely? Absolutely. I absolutely believe it. I don't even find it an interesting debate because I can point you to examples of chemical plants all over the country that have potential for massive problems that are unsafely. The waste issue is a separate problem, and so in a social energy standpoint, from a kind of maybe if fear is part of that. I don't have fear about a nuclear power plant in the U.S. I have fear about what we're going to do with the waste. I'm not sure I think the same way about a nuclear power plant in some former Soviet republic. But guess what? They're doing it anyway.
I didn't ask Brian.
So that's the problem for me.
I think I might be near another point of agreement, at least for the two of us, which is we have tended to react with fear to nuclear power, and I think the sort of natural fight or flight response when you're afraid of something is sort of push it away. And so those of us, and I include myself in this, who are against nuclear power tend to think we've got to stop doing it. And I still believe that. But what that fear has also done is mean I haven't thought too much about this. The nuclear waste. Because I've thought, we have to stop making this energy out of uranium. What I have not thought about is the stuff we have already created. And so I need to be thinking, not just reacting. And so I think there's some point of agreement here about how important it is to look at what we have and think about it, and not just react at an emotive level on this issue. Is that?
Kevin? Why are you against it?
Because of
no, why? You said nothing about waste. Why are you against using nuclear power?
Oh, lots of reasons. I'll get to another one in a bit. I don't like the idea of turning matter into energy when there's energy free coming down from the sun and blowing in the wind. And I don't like the waste. And I'm afraid of it.
So, Kevin, can I ask? We're at a Christian camp here.
Yeah.
Why can't we have faith that we'll learn how to deal with waste?
Mm.
I need to address that because the problem is we don't talk about economics soon. I'm going to burst into flames.
Can you affirm something?
Yeah. I hear you're saying let's believe that we can solve this problem.
Because it's just an engineering problem.
But the problem is it's a financial problem. Because what's happened before...
It's just a financial problem.
...is that the companies that had the waste went bankrupt. And then there's tons of nuclear waste on trains going around the U.S. and there's nobody to pay for it. And it costs a fortune to deal with this, and nobody owns it and nobody takes responsibility for it. And that happens over and over again. So it may be technologically possible, but who is going to pay for it?
Yeah, so I think it's a great point, Jesse. I think we need to worry about economics. The waste is there.
Yeah, well, we've had decades of nuclear power plants, and we haven't come up with a technology yet to solve the waste problem. It seems to me this is putting the horse before the cart. I mean, it seems to me we should have the technology in place to dispose of the waste before we have the energy to, devise an energy solution.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point.
We don't do that with coal. The waste goes into the air. We didn't plan for that. It just happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I feel the same way about coal.
Yeah. Is that okay?
I think coal is more to me that if you look at the waste from coal, between coal and nuclear power plant, it seems to me that's more a technologically solvable problem. The carbon that's emitted by a coal-fired plant and the waste that's generated by a nuclear plant.
I'd like to point out something about coal that's more of a devil than most people realize.
That is,
coal has a lot of uranium in it. And when you burn it, it disperses through the air, so it's contaminating uranium and not being concentrated in a waste. And most people don't know that, and the coal industry isn't going to broadcast it.
I
want to go back to the question about can we have faith in God that we will find a technological solution. And as I sat in that question, I thought about the story that Alan gave us yesterday at Bible study about if our child is about to open the gate and go out in the street, we're going to go running screaming after them with tears in our eyes and our hearts all pounding, and a car is going to come and hit our child. And I think, are we saying that we should have faith that God will create a car that won't kill us? Perhaps our choices are about sin and consequences of sin, not about what, if we think of the waste is sin, can we have faith that God will find a technological solution to reverse our sin?
This is a great discussion. Thank you. I wanna use sin to move us on. And this is a terrible thing to have to cut all these wonderful conversations short. I wanna suggest, and I'm gonna talk for 3 or 4 minutes and then ask Brian if he agrees, that I wanna put up here, nuclear power is sinful. I think that's a point of agreement. I'm sure many of you have heard of Yucca Mountain in Nevada. That's where we're proposing to bury the waste. I'm not going to talk too much about Yucca Mountain except to say, in some ways it would be appropriate because it would be the radioactive materials coming home, because where we get the uranium is largely from mines in Nevada. More particularly, from mines on Navajo reservations in Nevada. From mines on Navajo reservations in Nevada that, when they were mined, were managed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, because we as a society had decided that our indigenous people weren't smart enough to manage themselves. So the Bureau of Indian Affairs negotiated a contract with a mining company that came in, paid about a quarter of what they would have paid anybody else for the rights to mine uranium, got a bunch of Navajo workers to do the mining, didn't build the ventilation shafts that laws would have required if they'd been on regular U.S. territory. and mined uranium from Nevada. And that's where we got a bunch of it. 5 years after the mine that I'm talking about in particular closed, a third of the miners had died of lung cancer. That's the process by which we've gotten the raw materials. And that's before it becomes energy and before it becomes waste. That's how we got the matter we turned into energy. Second point, just about this waste, really quick. Wherever we put it in Yucca Mountain, wherever we put it, unless we come up with a magic bullet, unless we find a way to make it just an engineering problem that engineers can solve, it lasts for, Brian was showing me in a book, a projection for how radioactive this material would be in the year 662,000, which is 660,000 years from this year, roughly, give or take. I'm off 8 years this time. to think that we are smart enough to know how to handle something for the next 660,000 years, to be confident. Okay.
If there's bound to be a problem in 100 years, okay? Mm-hmm. If they put it all in Yucca Mountain, there's bound to be something they screwed up on in 100 years.
Okay.
Okay, tell me a problem, that a technological problem that was a big problem 100 years ago that's still a big problem today.
So, if I could interject, I mean, I don't know if you've been to the other sessions we've had through the week, but one way that all discussions about science and ethics or science and society can end, and it might be the right way for them all to end. I happen not to think so, but one way they can all end is what I call the magic bullet argument. I'm a scientist. I've spent my life being thrilled about the inventive process, and I believe that in almost any area we're in, there is potential to do great things. But I'm kind of with Deanna in that I have a hard time reconciling that with a Christian identity to. I don't interpret Christian faith and hope as a certain understanding that technological solutions will come. I mean, that's not where I'm at. We're going to run out of time, so I want to throw one. You put sin.
I'm putting sin up. Can I put sin up?
You put sin up.
Brian's putting up with sin.
And my notion of, and the reason. My frame of sin here is one that's built around my framework of the chemical industry. In the chemical industry, at least since the 60s, we've talked about the notion of cradle-to-grave responsibility. I have been in many, many boardroom discussions about, here's a wonderful opportunity, a great material, we can make a lot of money at it, but it has such a suite of problems that we can't deal with it that we're not going to do it, right? Often, to be fair, maybe the suite of problems just creates so many economic problems that it's not, you know, if we count the cost of the waste associated with it, it doesn't look like a good business investment. So I think that our decision to use nuclear weapons drove the start of a nuclear process that we have not thought through the cradle to grave responsibility for, and I do think that's sinful. Nuclear energy is sinful and should be eliminated. I think Kevin and I might disagree on the when. I would argue that it is the devils that we own here, right? Many of you have taken me to task this week for saying global warming's not a big enough problem. and I still believe that's true. But it is a big problem. And I worry about it as a problem a lot. And I think one of Kevin and I's kind of fundamental disagreements is I get stuck in the nuclear coal debate, and I hope you are right in that 10 years from now, this is all just a moot point, that we're running on wind and solar and biofuels and hydrogen from algae.
Efficiency,
right. Conservation. Right.
But and the people said.
But I'm not super confident. And in the meantime, I see us building power plants. And I also, this is a slippery logical slope, but it's one I believe, which is not uncommon. I think that if we say we're going to put a window around nuclear power, this is something that we are going to do for the next 50 years. It's going to force us to deal with this a little bit more efficiently. Right now, this is just a presidential debate trick show, right? That nobody's really dealing with. I mean, we talk a lot about it. Yeah, there's been some money spent at Hanford cleanup, but I don't think we're really any closer to a real solution than we were when I was in college in 1980.
And so I think there's so many questions. There's two questions I want to frame about community here. One is, do you want to be with me with my head in the clouds? And I admit, this is not a realistic thing, but I want to believe that we could decide to shut down the nuclear power plants tomorrow and conserve, genuinely give things up, and commit to solar, wind, geothermal. I want to believe that about our society. I cannot chart it out and show you that it's possible. I want to believe it. And that's one question that we need to ask about the social energy piece. And I think it's a place Brian and I are in some disagreement. The other place we're in a disagreement is that he makes a really good point, which is, how do you get social energy around nuclear waste? If we shut down all the nuclear plants, are we really going to take responsibility for this? Or are we going to say, whew, glad the era of nuclear is over, we don't have to think about it anymore. And so he makes, I think, the really good point that continuing nuclear power is a way to get some social energy into solving this real bad problem, which I take very seriously. I think it's a really strong point. I still think I'm right, but I think it's really strong.
One of the other thing I'd like to add that Kevin and I really have not talked a lot about this, trying to keep it a little fresh, but one of the things we have talked about is if you think about our natural versus social energy framework, I think it's fair to say that in the U.S. right now, the social energy around nuclear power is just, the social energy change it would take for us to embrace this is a huge investment, right? It's a huge investment I think in education, it's a huge investment in emotion, it's a huge economic investment. And so that's a real issue. I think somebody, I don't remember who early on was talking about the fear and the energy associated. I think that, you know, if I were going to back away from what I see as a debate of coal versus nuclear, the reason I would back away from it is that we're past the tipping point in social energy, that we're at an unrecoverable place, which I don't understand as a scientist. But it could be that that's the place.
We have time for one or two quick questions.
Sorry,
one sec. She had her hand up first, I think.
If we devote for the next 50 years a certain amount of energy, time and money in, for example, using nuclear energy, which I personally accept that the problem is nuclear waste rather than the technology to create energy that way, are we diverting that money and all that energy that it uses to get people to agree that this is okay from another more sustainable, perhaps say hydrogen-based energy source. In other words, we go to all the trouble of trying to convince everybody that we could use nuclear energy safely and solve all these problems and do this conversion and whatnot, but really we still don't have a sustainable source, so we have to go to something else anyhow in the possible foreseeable future. How much time do we and money and effort do we invest in getting over the fear, for example, and working out all these problems, and then we still are going to have to go to something else?
I think it's a strong. I think it's a great point. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I don't know that any of us really know.
A question I have is about the who owns the nuclear energy in the future? Because it seems to me that a goal for the poor people of the world would be to develop a technology like solar, where the sunshine is free and the source of power can be decentralized. And the problem we have now is the petroleum comes from a few places, and they have all the power. And that's a fear with nuclear, and with coal, for that matter. So is that a factor in the equation? Who owns it, and how can you distribute it to everyone?
Yeah, we talked about that in our hydrogen one that you missed. I'm sorry.
And we confirmed that you were doing, you were hiking in that way.
Just a comment. If 90% of our nuclear waste is created by making nuclear weapons, why don't we just quit making nuclear weapons, and that will buy us a lot of time.
And here's where. Well,
can.
Yeah, of course, we can't do that.
But here's where my lack of being an expert may harm this question, but it's 99%. But I think that's mostly historical. I think the rate of production of plutonium has dropped way down. I'm not even aware that we're actually making it right now. So it's like a historical sin.
I think you're kind of on a track to put us on an electrical engine, an electrical energy society. And so we're talking about different means of generating electrical energy. And I think once you decide that, I think that can do a lot of good things, because I think the battery technology developments are such that we're going to have plug-in electrical cars before very long, which will take a lot more electricity but a lot less oil. And so, which you may be arguing things that don't have to be argued here, in that things will sort of step their way through in terms of as solar energy becomes better developed, it'll replace some of the nuclear plants, and these all have finite lives. They're 50-year kind of plants. So,
I completely agree. That's my hope, but I'm not confident about the time frame of that transformation.
And I'm not confident solar is going to develop itself unless we demand that it get developed. That's the only other comment I want, because I share your hopes. Absolutely.
Yeah, but you're going to have waste from the solar from all the solar panels that we're throwing out. And you're also going to have the people objecting to the fields of solar panels and the objections to wind farms, just not because they don't look nice.
Not like this.
And the point of that is that it's not nuclear energy that's sinful. It's human beings' interaction with that kind. So that to say we're going to have solar energy and then everything is going to be great because the sun is free, the technology to turn the sunlight into electricity is not free. So there will still be issues about control and distribution.
Absolutely.
So I think it's unfair to say nuclear energy is sinful. Let's get something else where we won't be sinful.
To be clear, I think Kevin and I both agree.
I understand
it's
what you meant to say
of,
there.
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
I understand. But I think it's unfair to suggest that there's a kind of energy where we don't have manifestations.
Is that okay? I didn't mean to do it behind your back.
Let's take one more question. You've had your
Just the thing about doing it as a transition technology for the next 50 years, I get concerned because once we get into something and get used to it and get power structures set up with it, we tend to not change it, even if it's a good idea to change it.
Yeah, institutions.
Yeah, well, if you've been here this week, you've heard us make that argument.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to deny it. I'm worried about it.
Yeah, we have to put real strictures around it. Like
the only thing I would say is that the infrastructure for nuclear power exists. 20% of our power today. So we're not talking about a change. So we hope that this session has at least caused you to take a little time to think, step back, and maybe think slightly in a slightly bigger frame about nuclear energy. Our goal is not to take you to a solution, but to model what we hope was an ethical debate, or discussion, conversation, sorry. Tomorrow what we're going to do is try and pull this stuff together around sort of a centralized theme of, should we be able to use as much energy as we can afford? And what are the consequences of that?
Which I think will pick up on this question of, if we're people of faith, do we just trust that there's all the energy we want? Or do we believe we have to sacrifice? And so we're going to pick up on lots of these questions, and we hope you'll be there to pick up on them with us.